Welcome back to Gin and Topic.
If you've forgotten, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Anya.
And we drink gin.
And we don't know anything.
But it's okay, because we've got a load more experts. We've got some really cool topics, and we're going to find out about them.
Yeah, while drinking gin.
Perfect. This episode contains a little bit more than our usual swearing. A little bit more
crudity.
Not crudities. We're not having a little snack.
Be nice though, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I like some crudities. Yeah. They go well
that'd
with
be good.
The gin.
Yeah. I could be about that life. But anyway. Enjoy, because it makes it more fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Enjoy. So, hello. Gin Topic.
Gin and topic. This week, I'm arguing with somebody.
Well, having a heated debate and an allowed heated debate.
I'm not very good at those, but we'll give it a go.
Okay, because this week was one of those subjects where it was, okay, we can talk about it, but it's going to be involved lots of opinions.
Yes, lots of
mainly
opinions.
Mainly me.
I don't want to say shitting on something, but shitting on something.
And we'll see what happens with the shitting. Excellent.
We're doing this.
So let's explain a little bit more. So this week we are talking to Lucy Rycroft Smith. We were talking to Lucy about talking about maths.
Yeah.
And my response was, well, we can talk about maths as long as you don't mind on your shitting on it. And it being quite a heated, discussion about the fact that we don't think maths is taught very well in school.
Yeah.
So she said, yeah, bring it on. Mm-hmm. Really want to have that discussion. Mm-hmm. And gave us the question of, why do people love to hate it?
I don't love to hate it. I wish I loved it. But unfortunately, I don't.
Yeah. And I think for me, that question brings up two things. One, I think there is a societal thought mm-hmm. that we should hate maths and maths is boring and maths is hard and maths is difficult.
Which
two, I think it's taught badly. So it is hard and it is boring and it is difficult.
Yeah. And when hard it gets difficult, too difficult thing, with a bunch of year 10s in a room, you just end up playing Snog, Marry, Avoid for a lesson.
Yeah.
But tell you what, learnt a lot of people, would snog a lot of people.
I was going to say, I thought you were going to say, learnt a lot about snogging.
No, I didn't learn anything about snogging.
So anyway, with Lucy, we are going to talk maths. We're going to talk why do people love to hate it.
We are going to be sharing headphones for the entire episode because we're having technical difficulties.
Well, we love it.
Let's do this.
Okay, so let's do this and we'll do it with gin. But we've got a gin that Lucy has recommended and I don't know what to do with it.
No.
So I'm going to talk to Lucy and see what she's doing with it.
I think that's a good idea.
And then we'll decide.
Yeah.
Okay.
Start with the gin because I'm going to need one with this.
You want to talk about the gin?
I do want to talk, because I've never had a gin where Sarah goes, I don't know what to do with it, because Sarah always knows what to do
with
it.
What caused the dilemma, Sarah?
I think because we had a neat gin yesterday. So then I was looking at it and going, okay, well, this is a gin liqueur, so it should just be neat. Mm. But I'm like, yeah. But we did that. And then I looked on their website and they had a cocktail, which was the damsel in distress, but we didn't have the ingredients. Mm-hmm. And then I read on the website that the other best thing to do with it is to pour it over cheesecake. And now all I want is cheesecake.
Oh,
so then
I
didn't know what to do
with the gin. You know.
I know, right?
No, but all that got in my head was cheesecake. That was it. It was just cheesecake.
But you don't have to have it with the gin. You can have cheesecake later.
I haven't got any cheesecake. That's the problem.
So I think use this as an opportunity to be creative and put whatever you want in the gin.
Well, you've only bought one option out now, haven't you, after all this talk?
All we've got is tonic and ice.
Well, that's fine. I mean, that is what I'm drinking with.
I think I'm going to pour you a bit neat.
Oh, God, okay.
And then I'll add ice and tonic.
Okay.
And have it long.
Okay.
So tell us where this gin has come from.
Whilst I'm trying to get in the bottle.
There's two parts to this gin. One is the ethical, local, independent thing, which is really important. And so it's really funny that I'm on this podcast because I am not somebody who drinks a lot. I'm definitely not somebody who drinks gin a lot. And I'm definitely not somebody who knows about where to get ethical, independent alcohol. Luckily, I am a completely black sheep in my family. And all I need to do is call up any of my sisters and they would instantly tell me the answer to this. I'm a mathematician in a family of people who work in fashion in London. Oh, wow. And so excellent. It's absolutely their job to stay on top of stuff like this, know where the coolest gin place is in town. And so it's great. I can outsource this kind of work. So I called my sister and said, I need to get some gin that is from a nice independent place that won't necessarily have been something people have tried before and is ethically made. And she went, oh, yeah, there's just a place around the corner. I thought, of course there's a place around the corner. Of course you know it. Of course you know the owners. And
yeah.
And so she sent me a bottle, which was lovely. But the reason I chose this particular one, because I think there would have been various options there, is the name. Mm-hmm. And I'm presuming that you know a bit about the history of gin here, but I didn't. And I did quite a lot of research on it because that's how I love to spend my time reading things. I can't get enough. And so there's something about the words Mother's Ruin that really speak to me. The concept of being a slovenly woman.
I love that. Slovenly woman just That's makes me I think of the best kind life. Of woman. It's so snuggly slovenly. And just like, oh, I love to be slovenly.
The thing about gin is that, you know, it was a tool, it still is to some extent, but a tool of the patriarchy, right? And used to keep women down, keep specifically poor women down, sex workers, discredit people. And so, you know, drinking that gin that's called Mother's Ruin, as a mother now, as somebody who, all right, comes from privilege, but understands a bit of how that was used in the past. It's just a massive F you to the patriarchy, isn't it? It's like,
I love that.
Oh, it's brilliant. So we are drinking the Mother's Ruin, and this one is a damson gin.
It does smell lovely. It smells like sort of almonds and being
it's
in
like
a meadow.
And a cuddle at the same time.
And I love that the bottle is like an old-fashioned bottle.
Good, isn't it?
So we could just sit on doorstep and just swig.
Ooh, that would go bloody lovely with a cheesecake.
Or ice cream or anything.
That's really good.
I'm just going to pour that over breakfast.
As we are.
If you're already a slut and slovenly and all the things they call you, just inhabit that identity. What would you do, right? What's the worst, you know, if they're going to call you that, you may as well be it, right? What's the worst we could do? Drink all the gin and go and, you know, just get some cheesecake. Just find some cheesecake in that way that drunken people sniff out food.
In my jogging bottoms and my stained hoodie.
Just walk around the village.
Yeah.
Just like walking in people's back doors, go, got new cheesecake. Got new cheesecake.
But yeah, that's not a bad
that
gin.
That certainly
like
isn't a mother's
pudding.
Ruin.
It's quite puddingy, isn't it?
Should we make it into a long one
I'd
to
like
see what
a
it
long
tastes? Because otherwise I'm going to drink all of that.
Oh, it's like drinking candy floss.
It's a pop. I'm having a pop.
That's just, I feel like the weight's been lifted off my shoulders and the tension's flown out of my jaw and I'm just a new woman. This isn't Mother's Ruin. This is Mother's Pick Me Up.
Which is perfect for the subject that we're dealing with because you'll need some Mother's Ruin all the way through.
I might cry at some point when the trauma comes out, heads up.
Right. Now, this is the absolute first thing I say when I tell people I'm a mathematician and I say, but no one's ever just a mathematician. You always have to be at least part therapist if you're going to say you're a mathematician, because I defy you to introduce yourself as a mathematician at parties, anywhere, just in public, just standing at a bus stop, introduce yourself as a mathematician and see if you can get away with minimum 15 minutes of having to listen to that person's trauma about maths at school. You can't.
Yeah.
You can't. And the thing is, I have so many stories of how people just crack open, you know, complete stranger, by the way, crack open to me and tell me all their all their mass trauma, which is fine. You know, I'm used to it now. My favourite story, though, happened really quite recently, and I'm ready for it now. I fill up the drink before I introduce myself and I get ready to sit down and be comfortable because it's going to happen. Hover near a couch, you know, and this person sat down and said, "Oh, I hated maths at school." Now, she was Australian. I'm not going to do the accent. It would be rude to her. I can. It's really good, but not going to do it. She said, "I hated maths at school." Oh, and she sort of launched into the tirade. And there was this one, There was this one teacher. She told me about this one teacher. I said, "Oh, I'm really sorry that happened to you." She went, and then her whole face changed. And she went, "It's all right, though. Guess what? I found out last week." I said, "What?" I promise you, this is what she said. She got eaten by a shark. What do you do with your face when someone says that to you? I honestly didn't know. God. I didn't know how to react because she was so happy about it.
Yeah.
And I just, what's the appropriate face when someone's maths teacher gets eaten by a shark?
There isn't.
I haven't practiced that face, so I wasn't ready for it. And no. I think about that woman a lot.
But thank God you didn't start to drink your drink. But it could have been messy.
Right.
And thank God you said she was Australian, because if you hadn't given that context, you'd have been like, hold on a minute.
Confusing, wouldn't it?
Be like, well, I did grow up near the Wash. Like, I was right near the Wash in Norfolk, but nobody got eaten by a shark.
Really suspect if someone gets eaten by a shark in the UK, isn't it?
Really, really suspect.
Okay, so you've got two people here who have very differing reactions.
Hugely different, yeah.
So maths for me at school was brilliant, and I had Mr. Pullen. He was brilliant because he would walk into the class and he would throw a problem on my desk, and then he'd go and teach. And then I would work on the problem as well as the lesson during the lesson. And then he'd come to the end to go, "Have you solved it?" And it was always a pattern or a something that, and I utterly loved it.
So how did that come about? How did he know you were sort of the sort of person that would like that?
I can't remember, but I mean, we're talking.
You take one look at Sarah and you go, "She likes problems.
She is a problem."
So I love patterns, love problems. I am a problem. This is why I took you on.
Yeah, exactly. That's where I was going with it.
So this was senior school, and so much so that I went on to do maths at A level, moved school, and just went, "Fuck that," and swapped to drama instead.
Oh, interesting.
But so my experience was brilliant.
Well, no.
Whereas Anya's was always a struggle.
I had one excellent teacher in high school, Mr. Skipper, who was, Mr. Skipper was fabulous. Mr. Skipper, if you're listening, I hated that you didn't decorate your classroom for Christmas. I thought that was terrible of you, but you were a great maths teacher. I'll give you that.
We had...
There was one I remember very distinctly in junior school who told me off for cutting something inside the lines once in a very harsh way. And then she realised I couldn't do my times tables, and it just all went downhill from there. I won't name her, but you know.
And then we tried to get you extra support.
And she was scary and made me feel very stupid at points, which wasn't her fault. It was just, you know, she was one of those sort of hardline teachers. She did teach me a lot as well.
Yeah.
And then I had lovely Darren. I redid my maths GCSE and I had a maths tutor named Darren who just got how my brain worked.
Oh,
he was really nice. And he always...
He got both you and your brother through
GCSE. And he always sat there. And whenever I was getting like stressed or overworked, he just went, "It's all right, it's hard. Of course it's hard. Oh. It wouldn't be easy, you know." And he just went, "Yeah, of course it's hard. You can do it though. We'll just have a chocolate and we'll carry on." And I was like, "Yeah, all right, this works." And I passed the second time round. Yeah.
So there you go. There you go. There's, you see, you've history. Got yourself a drink and we've sat down and we've gone, bleh.
It might also be important to mention that I have recently found out I'm dyslexic at the age of 21 and had no idea throughout the whole, I hadn't been told, didn't realise until then. So that may have factored into my maths issues.
So do you think there were other subjects which you found traumatic in a similar way?
Physics, because physics was also very difficult. And although I struggled with spelling and stuff in English, I loved English because it was reading and it was creative and fun. But I think anything where there were lots of set rules and numbers I had to learn.
So what I find really interesting about what you're saying there is one of the most common opposites that people set up when they're talking about maths, and you just did it just then. So on the one hand, we have hard, mm-hmm. mine's out the gutter, and on the other hand, we have fun and creative.
Mm-hmm.
And so if this was a seesaw, maths would be very heavily weighted down this end for you.
Yeah.
And that's your experience of it. And I think if you ask people very quickly to have a response, they would agree with you. Most people would agree with you. Mm-hmm. And so you haven't had the chance to experience the creative fun parts of maths, yeah. or maths through that creative fun way of learning or teaching, I yeah. guess.
Definitely.
And that's something that's particularly interesting to me, because there is, I mean, like any kind of academic discipline, and I'm, you know, I'm quite a serious research mathematician in lots of ways, but I'm really not. And like any kind of discipline, there's fallouts, there's fads, there's arguments, there's, you know, all kinds of politics. And the setup between hard and fun. Oh, mm-hmm. it sounds worse every time
brilliant.
I say it.
I'm loving
every
it.
Time I say it, it's worse. That idea, the hard versus fun idea, is still the most pervasive argument in maths education. It's never gone away. Everybody yeah. still disagrees about that, because, you know, what is maths? No one knows. Should it be hard? Should it be fun? Can it be both? You'll find all of these arguments have been played out in the last 50 years. Nobody's ever really resolved it. And so it's interesting to hear that's come through really obviously for you. Yeah, and that you've been on the pointy end of the hard maths. Let's not finish this.
No, as the faces of my teachers flash before my eyes, I really don't want to go down that road.
Because that thing you describe of finding, you basically were brutalized by maths. This is like a genuine phrase that people use, and you were. And that, if you ask people whether they like maths and sort of look at the trajectory over time, really young kids, almost all of them love maths. There's nothing to not love. They hit a point where they start to realize there's a gender thing, and so the boys tend to like it a bit longer than the girls, and then they hit a point where they have to start doing exams, and they have to start doing really like drill and practice and learning timetables and all that, and whatever age that is, it starts to taper off, and then they like maths basically less and less as they get older and through school. And that's not true of every subject, but it is generally true of maths. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I remember also, because your younger sister loves maths.
Loves maths.
So when she was younger, I remember the school disco, you know, you're talking year 2, 3 in this school disco, you know, and you've love got the guy running the school disco, and he's there going, you know, what's your favourite subject? You know, bet it's not maths. And of course, all the kids are there going, maths. And you're just like, but it does start really early, the drip feeding as well, that maths is crap.
He sounds, I bet he but played the so cha-cha many. Slide on a loop. Yeah.
I wish people didn't.
Shit on it.
Well, it's, so one of the other things I do, many things, is stand up, right? And
love that.
You don't make the lazy joke. You do at the beginning when you're just learning, but like, it's like, you know, make the next joke that people aren't expecting, make the slightly intelligent joke, make the joke that twists the joke, the lazy joke, like, ha ha, don't we all hate maths, it's so hard, I'm so bored of that, come on guy, do something different. So I think there's something about working with younger kids where I'm trying to think of a really interesting analogy. I think it's teaching music, because I've taught lots of things. Maths is like not my one true love, and you know, I'll die for it. And when you teach music, especially with young kids, but actually almost any age kids, you kind of learn there's two ways to be a music teacher, and one is to work against the kids, and one is to work with the kids. So I don't know if you've ever been in a music room with some children, but I'm sure you can imagine.
Is this the DJ button on the keyboard by any chance?
Right. And so almost, it doesn't matter if there's an adult in the room or not, things are going to get bashed. And you can work with it or you can work against it. You can be that guy who says, nobody touch anything until we've all learned a C major chord, right? If you want, and that's fine. That is, you know, there's a way to go about things, but why not harness it? Like, let them go crazy for a bit. Like, don't break anything, kids, but go and bash that tambourine if you want to. Go and see what it feels like to slide up and down a piano key. You know, all of that. You know, you have that sense with maths too. I think this is what people don't realize. Like, there's a feeling that maths is not only hard, but like it's really abstract. You know, mathematicians sit and think about things in their mind, and that's what it's about. And it is for some people, but actually increasingly not. It can be really concrete and really about actual objects that you can play with. And then even when it isn't, it can be about pictures of objects that you can play with and draw. And so we have this thing in the UK where we're obsessed with getting kids away from using objects and their fingers. We think you can't be a good mathematician if you use your fingers
learned, like,
or objects.
A few months ago about the 11 times tables and being able to put fingers. I had no idea. Do you know how much easier that makes it?
You mean the nine times?
Nine times. Yeah. See, I don't even fucking know.
I was going to say that.
But like...
Yeah, yeah, nine times table. It's like, so cool.
So at the risk of again dragging this podcast down to the gutter, fingers are amazing and we should all remember that. And they're, you know, as a mathematical tool, they're excellent. But you watch kids, you know, year 10, 11 sitting in an exam trying to hide the fact that they're counting. They're so embarrassed. There's so much shame around it. And that's really a cultural thing. There are lots of countries in the world in which using objects to do maths, using fingers, using calculators, you know, moving blocks around, making patterns is not a shame.
So, I mean, immediately I'm thinking about the abacus.
Right, right.
And just moving blocks in.
And if you've ever been to Japan, they have this thing called the soroban, which is how kids learn to calculate, which is like an abacus. And when the little kids learn to calculate and they physically move beads along and they do it so fast, it's so cool. They're like, and then they give the answer. And what happens is they get so used to using the soroban that as they grow up, they don't need it anymore. They just sit and their fingers twitch and they do it all in there. It's incredible. It's so cool. And if you scan their brains, you can see the bits of their brain are firing up that goes with the fingers that they would use to manipulate it with. It's so excellent. So, yeah, you know, you're so right that we just force kids away from using stuff in front of them because we're like, maths is so abstract and important. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't do that in art. Art's abstract too, but we don't need to force it into this particular domain. There's this thing with maths where the first thing people jump to is it's different to other things. It's harder. We use it as a measure of intelligence in a different way. And then as soon as you scrutinize that, it falls apart. And when people say, you know, like, oh, I had this maths anxiety. So I don't know if you know, like, maths anxiety is a thing that's been studied. It's a construct, really? Like, it's real. And people will say, I have severe math anxiety, which, you know, translates to quite often if there's a timed element, if there's a performance, a public element, it's about calculating. I've definitely experienced it myself. But then when people say to me, and that's why I hate maths, I say, okay, but what happens in drama? What happens in music? What happens in French? Why is that different? And I think it's simultaneously the same and different. And exactly how, you know, for lots of people, they just haven't quite figured out yet. There's something about maths that and the way it's used to punish people that just absolutely freezes them cold. And I think most people experience that, even if they quite enjoy maths. I definitely have, you know, that feeling when you're in front of a class doing an A-level problem, you get to the end, you know the answer's wrong, but you don't know where you've messed up. And, you know, 30 expectant faces looking at you. And there's something
just
about
the idea
being
of that
female.
Is making me sweat a little bit, I'm not going to lie. Just the thought of it alone, I'm like, oh my God.
You know, I'm a white woman, right? But I'm a woman in maths. And although teaching is predominantly female, the further you go up in terms of positions of power, you get fewer and fewer females. And certainly as a mathematician, you have to represent as a female. And I have been a queer woman out most of my life too. So I have this thing about, like, I'm a mathematician of a particular flavor. And so I have to try and make sure I represent well. So you make a mistake and you're like, oh, on behalf of all women, I've messed up. And I'd like to apologize on behalf of all women because most of them are good at maths. Just not me. It's a really interesting one. And like I say, you know, I talk to mathematicians of color and they have this, like, really compounded. It's even worse because they don't get that grace, that leeway. People are just like, yep, you're rubbish at maths and so is everyone like you.
And I think there's that whole, there is a right answer. And if you get it wrong, you've just got it wrong. I find that quite hard.
Yeah.
Because that's why I always love problems, because then it was just all about finding patterns, finding problems, and it didn't really matter how it got there.
So you know, but it's a lie, right? The right thing. It's a shh.
But it's a lie.
Well, then why was I told they were wrong?
It's not true.
What's so exciting about maths is you can, if you frame it right, as you say, as a problem, you can totally sidestep that right or wrong thing. And even if you are kind of forced to say we're working towards a very specific endpoint, there's so many ways to get there. Mm. It's so exciting. You know, there's like, can we think of 30 different ways to get to the solution here? Already I'm excited.
I'm scared. I'm like, I'm not even sure I can think of one, let alone 30.
Yeah, but you could just have fun trying to find it.
No, I'm just going to leave at that point. I'm like, I need the toilet. But bye.
You absolutely hit on it yourself earlier, though, when you were telling me about Darren and... we all should have a Darren in our life.
Big up Darren. We love Darren. I hope to God Darren listens to this. Darren, you're basically saved my maths education.
I'll make Darren listen to this.
When you were talking about Darren, your entire body language changed, and the thing that made you feel comfortable and relaxed when previously you'd felt quite rigid was that Darren, as a mathematician, modelled not knowing things, making mistakes, and feeling that he didn't have to be perfect. And those are the things that made you feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. And so as a maths teacher, that's almost our most important job. There is something that just comes ahead of that, and that is making people feel welcome and like they belong in maths.
And that was the chocolate. That was what did it.
There we go. And again, I'm so conscious we're speaking about this as white women, and we don't, you know, much as we may have had all these issues with maths and being in maths classroom, we didn't struggle to get in the door in the sense that we just didn't feel like it was a place for us anyway. Like there were issues, but they weren't necessarily belonging issues in the same way that other people feel this.
Yeah.
And it's a particular problem for particular students, but there's an identity that's really well researched as being, people perceive it as incompatible with being a mathematician, and it's being black and it's being male. And that's particularly interesting because otherwise male is quite aligned with mathematician. So there's a ton of research on this, but you know, there's all kinds of things that we can do as math teachers to make people feel like they belong in this world. It's for them. And that's what your teacher did with the problems, right? This is for you. You belong here. You're special. Yeah. I care about you. You're welcome. That's what that problem meant.
Yeah, absolutely. And you take it a bit further. You go with that passion, that excitement, etc. Okay, going back to maths being something that you can belong to or not, as a parent as well, it just keeps bloody changing. So, and I know mass anxiety in parents is really high because how can you support children when you look at it and go, why the fuck are you doing it like that? Because if you just do it like this, it's so much easier.
On behalf of mass, I'd like to apologise. So.
Thank you. I'll take that.
I don't know why I've self-appointed queen of maths, but let's call it that.
Brilliant.
The thing about maths changing is, again, from a really zoomed out perspective, this is a cycle, right? And when we're in it, we don't see it. But if you look at maths over the last like 100 years, basically there's two pulls that go on in maths education. And one of the pulls is traditional. And traditional is about long division and processes and learning your times tables and making sure you have the facts right and Michael Gove, right?
Oh, all of those things trigger me intensely.
Especially the last.
I would slap his slappable face. I really would.
See, also, back to basics. I mean, I could go on. I think you get the picture, okay?
Cool.
And that's because maths is hard, but we just have to get through it. You know, that's the general. The general consensus. And then the other pull factor is this, but do we have to do it that way? What if we just tried to understand it instead? And we looked at structures and we were able to be a bit more creative. And God forbid, we are fun some of the time and engaging, and we allow students to solve problems. And as I'm saying it, it sounds really straightforward that, of course, we should do the second one, right?
Mm-hmm.
And lots of maths education researchers would suggest that. But what makes this a really uneven seesaw is, guess where the politicians are and guess who has the power to make change? Basically, we just get this cycle of like backlash and rebound happening where we've got like new maths. It's really cool and fun. And then some people say, oh, but if they're enjoying it, it's not hard enough. Or if you do discovery learning, they're frustrated and bored because they don't really have the skills they need for the workplace or whatever they decide maths is for.
Mm-hmm.
And so we rebound back to basics, traditional maths. Let's do some really hard arithmetic because that's more important.
Just put cool maths games on and let me play. I loved cool maths games.
And of course, the truth is always more complex. You know, one of the really interesting debates in maths education, truly, is this what's called procedural versus conceptual, where basically you need to practice a skill over and over again to get good at it. It's like absolutely anything, you know, sports, music, whatever. And then the conceptual, you also do need to understand the structure of the thing, the rules of how it operates, when you can use it, when you can't use it, and not always be given questions on it so that you can also decide to use that thing for yourself. And also sometimes like use it and it doesn't work, you know, all of that stuff. And this is, like I say, not at all just maths education, but there's a thing in maths education where we're just like, we fetishize it, we're just obsessed with it. And so people are just like, you have to do procedural first and only procedural, you have to do conceptual. So, and it's like, you have to do both, and you have to do both in complementary ways so that kids get a taste of everything. And so, you know, back to music, I need to do some scales, I need a bit of theory, it's really helpful to read music, but if I just do that and I never get to just like play some songs, invent some music, then it's, you know, I need both those things basically.
Yeah.
When you ask people to picture what doing maths looks like, never mind picture a mathematician, because I tire of that. But picture what doing maths looks like, and like sketch it, you know, mentally picture it. And what people completely forget to mention is the thinking part. And genuinely, a lot of me doing maths is me lying on the sofa with a cat, because I'm playing with ideas in my mind, and after a probably maximum 3 minutes, I have to sketch them out, because that's the kind of dude I am. But lots of people don't need to. They have this sufficiently rich mental imagery that they can just sit there and play with it and go, what happens there? What if I do this? And it's your problem solving all over again. But it's that kind of joy of composing and recomposing in your brain, which is so cool. And once you have access to it as a mathematician, and anyone can, then there's something quite, I'm not going to say obsessive, there's something quite addictive. And none of those words. It's not like cocaine. It's like, what is it like? It's like hamburgers.
Oh, I had a really good one for lunch today.
Yeah. You know, like you can, there's a hamburger for everyone. This is what I mean. Yes. But I used to be the person that said, I hate films. I don't get films. Everyone wanks over films and thinks they're the thing. And I can't be bothered. It's such a long amount of my time and there's no payoff normally. And someone just said to me, look, do you feel that way about books? And I said, well, no. And they said, what changed? And I was like, well, I found some books that I loved. And they said, it's the same thing. You just haven't found the right one for you. And I think that's true of maths too. It's the way in that you haven't found that worked for you, and where somebody came to meet you instead of you having to go all the way to meet them. And I think that's probably the way that I would, you know, if I was queen of maths, I am queen of maths. I did have the queen's speech and I was able to evangelize to the nation about this, I think that's what I would say. You know, everybody has the potential to love maths. And I'm sorry if you don't yet, but I will make it my mission to help you do it.
So when you said to visualize, right, I immediately got two different pictures of maths that came to mind when you were going through that, of doing maths. One is the amazing sort of creative people round a chalkboard with lots of equations and changing the
Mine was similar to that. Mine was Keira Knightley and Benedict Cumberbatch in The Imitation Game. That was where I was.
That kind of, that kind of sort of creative mass, as it were. And then a hard chair and table.
A blazer and tie.
Everything's hard.
Everything's hard. It is all hard.
A man with an
erection. It's been a long time since anything was hard.
And blank paper and trying to get the hard hat.
Keira Knightley in a hard hat and high vis. I could get behind that. Sign me up. Maths is interesting now.
So anyway, my other image was, you know, this hard chair, hard table, and having to get the right answer and the stressing around.
Here and an exam invigilator walking down the middle with a cardigan pulled around her and her boots slapping on the stone, and she comes up to you with a like coffee breath and she's like, do you need any help? Have you tried reading the question? I'll read the question with you. And she's like, okay, I've read the question. Does that help? It's on the question. Okay, bye. And that's all we do.
That was incredible. It was like I was there.
It was. Thank you. It was. I've got a lot of, that's the trauma.
And do you know what was so interesting about that, Sarah? Your your vision of creative maths is still equations on a chalkboard.
Yeah, I know. I know how to party.
Look, I'm not here to math shame you. Honestly, like whatever you're into, I will not be yucking your yum here. Oh, okay, I don't believe in that. But I do think it's interesting that, you know, that's the kind of limit at this point. It's collaborative and we're all writing on a big board. And if I tell you that, you know, my practice of maths includes, you know, definitely making art, I spend a huge proportion of my day drawing things that aren't just useful and diagrammatic, but like beautiful, drop dead gorgeous. Like the colour palette matters. The materials, I care about this stuff.
Let me make a collage.
Right. The kind of creative maths I'm talking, I mean, building stuff with Lego, you know, thinking about, I've got this book literally on my desk that says Mathematical Reasoning with Diagrams, and it's so exciting. It's like proving stuff, but just with pictures. It's so cool.
Just
I leave you alone?
Yeah, with the book.
Oh my God. Okay.
The potential to be creative with maths, like it hasn't got in the classroom yet for most people. For some it has, like there's some pockets of amazing maths teachers doing amazing things. I was thinking today about talking to you about what maths is, because people just don't get it. And I totally understand. They don't need to get it because, you know, there's this kind of maths, the subject at school that they get handed. It's the neat little package and they do it. But it's like the world's biggest conspiracy. Like there's this big group of mathematicians over in the corner and we're all having a party and nobody knows. They think we're so boring, we've got away. Oh crap, I'm talking about this in public. It's like the first rule of maths club that I've broken. But you know, we are genuinely partying and having a good time doing all kinds of amazing stuff and just no one knows, and we have like this completely wrong reputation. It just cracks me up. And so I wrote down this list of things that I do sometimes when I'm practicing maths, right? Categorizing sounds boring, doesn't it?
No. Okay, let me tell you something about me. I love lists. I love organizing. I love putting things into categories. It's basically my dream. And when I get stressed, I reorganize Tupperware cupboards.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have a degree in basically fitting things in boxes. And can you imagine restacking your Tupperware according to an actual algorithm that just told you how to fit everything in? So, and by the way, in about 3 years, I learned put the big stuff in and then fit everything around that. But imagine that. Imagine a mathematical program that's like, if you basically put all of your, like scan all your Tupperware, put it in this program, and it will spit out the best way to put it in so it looks nice and it fits neatly. How exciting would that be?
I'm questioning everything I've ever known.
I know. Someone's job is to write that stuff. How exciting is that? So I've sold you on categorizing already. Sold. I didn't even have to persuade you. It's really fun.
Yeah. Love it. Love it.
Measuring. And measuring stuff in interesting ways is a particular fun thing.
Okay, so my mind's in the gutter completely.
Right. Well, that's so unfortunate, isn't it? But you could, I mean, what's interesting about that? So let's take that as an example. Lots of people consider genital size to be some kind of indicator of something in men, right? Like, firstly, and very seriously, this is a real problem in the world for toxic masculinity. I'm not going to joke about that. It's shit.
Yeah.
I don't have to be a man and live in a world where everybody makes jokes about my penis size and therefore masculinity. But if we think about measuring penis size, it's dull just to measure length. As a mathematician, I would never just measure one thing about anything. So I'm so interested, what else could I measure about? Well, I could measure girth, right? Now, I could also do a girth to length ratio. Now, this is exciting.
Then you could plot them all on a graph.
Oh my God, I know. I could think about the size of, let's call it the bell end, because that's what it's called, versus the shaft and the proportion of that, couldn't I? I could think about the difference between flaccid and erect and how long it takes to go from one to the other. All of these things interesting to measure.
And of course, to do that, you would have to do it multiple times to get an average.
Oh, look at you with your repeated measurement. Oh, that makes me so happy.
I'm so glad my disgusting brain has gone here.
Let's, for the sake of gender balance here, say, imagine you wanted to measure your tits. As a mathematician, I'm like, this is really interesting already. They are not easy to measure.
No,
I don't mean like for a bra. I mean, you know, in interesting ways. So one thing you can do, because I have, is measure the water displacement of your breast.
Wait, as in...
Oh, what fun.
So volume. So I'm now measuring the volume of my breasts. I pop them in a bucket. Now, that's a problem for me. It's a big bucket. I pop them in a bucket, maybe one by one, see how we go. Think about where your boob ends and begins, because that's not trivial.
Yeah.
And then how much water comes out, provided the bucket's completely full, that's the volume of your breast. Archimedes knows this. Very we know this. Cool. It's very pretty cool.
That's way more interesting than the penises. I'm going to be honest. Sorry to penises.
Thing is, this we've just scratched the surface. We spent 3 minutes talking about how could you measure boobs. Imagine that's your job. Imagine, you know, you're making a YouTube video about measuring boobs, or you are tasked as a mathematician to say we need to measure boobs for something. I don't know, maybe it's a medical reason we need to do this. Maybe we need to help women. Maybe we haven't understood the way that boobs are shaped properly and we need to design bras better.
I would say that is probably true.
As a, well, if I'm absolutely going to be elected queen of maths, elected queen is an interesting phrase, but anyway, I think the thing I will stand underneath is boobs, and it will be, why the hell is everything so badly designed around boobs? Just awful. So there's a job for a mathematician or two. So that's, I mean, we're on number two of my like 10 verbs here, and already we're really excited. Overexcited, if anything.
How too excited about all of that. The rest of them.
Go on then, what's number three?
The next one's rank, so do your worst. So I've done some serious research. I know it's a surprise to everyone listening, but I have. One of the things I did was a method called comparative judgment, which is really interesting, where you just show people two things and say, pick which one you like best. I mean, I'm embarrassed that this is a research method.
I've played this game with which Avenger would you marry? So let's go there.
And it's actually a relatively recent research method, which is the funniest thing, because it emerged out of assessment. So you know how teachers have to mark tests and it's a problem, and also student books. Well, someone really smart once said, what if you just give two pieces of student work and get them to pick which one is better, and you do it with a whole class, and then they're ranked, and then it's much easier, and you don't have to actually look at every single one in the same way and judge by a set of criteria. You can just rank them first, and it turns out it saves teachers a ton of time, and it's really interesting and kind of more valid in some interesting ways. But anyway, so using comparative judgment to rank things, I did this whole study where I got people to just say that one's better than that one, or that one's better than that one, and then I produced obviously some amazing graphs, which is my best work, and it was so, I cannot tell you how fun it was. I made this graph where I had two groups that ranked the same stuff, and then I made a graph, was like a it's called a Sankey diagram, but it's not exactly that, where all of the things were ranked by one group on one side and all on the other, and then I joined them up in rainbow colors to show the relative position of each one. Honestly, it was the best day. The best day. I had to pick exactly 20 shades of rainbow colours so that it changed by the same amount each time. And that was one of my favourite things I've ever done. And so I promise you, like, ranking is fun, guys.
Ranking's fun.
Yeah.
Ranking's incredible, and everyone should be doing it. So, and that kind of comes with my fourth one, which is comparing, but that's also really fun.
I compare things all the time, but I'm not sure I do it in a mathematical way. It's just like, Sarah, there's ketchup shit. We need to get the other one.
But imagine if you did take a little bit of a mathematical mindset to it, right? How would you do it? What would, and this comes back to the measuring thing, but how would you compare? On what basis would you compare? Now, with something like ketchup, really exciting, because you should do a blind taste test, shouldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, comparing ketchups, I think there's such a cool way you could approach that mathematically. And it's about, you know, thinking about the question you're asking, you know, not just like which is best, but on what basis, what do I care about ketchup? Yeah. Like, we're doing math and we're asking the really important questions here. Like, this is, you know, investigative math at its best.
Yes.
I'm back on my list of verbs of ways that I practice math. Right. This is one of my favorite, building or creating stuff. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. It's so fun to make stuff out of maths. It's the best. You both don't look convinced already.
So no, because I'm here with the Lego and I'm there going, come on, let's make a sphere.
Oh my God.
And you now see why I used to cry when she tried to teach me maths. I can't build a fucking sphere out of Lego.
And I'm the only one left. Everyone's left me. And then she's there going, it doesn't work. I can't make it work. Sphere is one of the hardest shapes to make out of Lego, isn't it?
Yeah,
Sarah.
It was great fun. I was left on my own, but it was a happy day. It was a really happy day. And it wasn't a sphere. It ended up looking, and in fact, I wanted to put a basket underneath it because it did look like a hot air balloon, but it looked like a really good one.
In case in case it helps you feel better. Nothing is a sphere, is it really? So no. You're all right. Fair enough. But yeah, building and creating stuff, particularly out of 3D. And it's interesting to talk about this as a female because generally women and men are as good at maths as one another. And most of the differences that you find in the world are cultural, blah, 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 blah. And if you tell girls they're bad at maths, oh, look, they don't do very well at maths. Shocker. But there is a significant difference they keep finding, which is a relatively early difference in spatial ability or like moving shit around in your brain and with your hands. And so then, you know, there's some actual people in the world who think that's why women shouldn't drive cars, for example, because they're idiots. But I guess there is a cultural dimension to this because there is, you know, if you think about the sorts of games that boys get given to play with mm-hmm. very young, and it isn't just the Lego. A lot of this is, you know, Rubik's cubes or the puzzles that are spatial, anything that's 3D, remote control cars. If you do experiments and you give girls those at a young enough age, the differences magically disappear. You know, again, shocker. But we don't give those to girls to play with or encourage them to, or like you have to explicitly tell them. The problem is a lot of people say, well, if I put a girl in a room with a remote control car and a doll, she chooses the doll. That means women just naturally gravitate towards, you know, maternal stuff and babies. And
it's bollocks.
Makes me want to punch people. I don't, by the way, because, you know, I'm a, once again, serious academic. But the thing is that, you know, building and creating stuff with maths absolutely should be part of every kid's experience from a young age and at home, but really importantly in the maths classroom. And again, something that's been quite controversial of late is various different curricula get developed in countries and sort of move away, like I said, towards traditional, away from progressive and all this stuff. And the idea of building and making things in maths very young at the moment is kind of out of fashion. And it's such a sadness to me. Like, it's really, really sad because we're just robbing people of fun times. You know, that's the straightforwardness. But also later on, then you get women who really struggle with lots of, you know, 3D spatial stuff because they just haven't had a chance to practice it when they were young and it was fun. And I speak as one of these women. It's not innate. It's built up, you know, through practice and paying attention and awareness. But there's a sense in which if some people have an intuition that they develop and other people's, it's just absent. And for me, it genuinely is absent. And so, you know, I will like, I don't know which room is below me now. Like, I really don't in my house. I'm not joking. I don't. It's problematic on many levels, especially when you have a leak. But that, you know, maybe if I'd have done a lot more building with stuff when I was younger, I might. Who knows, you know? And there's still time, right?
Maybe that comes from my extensive Sims playing as a child.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say video games absolutely help this. There's a lot of research to suggest that. They're very, very good at supporting that. So then we've got testing. Testing is really, I don't mean testing like testing school.
Good, because that was like a moment of like.
No. I mean, right, did you ever watch, we were talking about this the other day and I was so excited. Did you ever watch Scrap Heap Challenge?
No, I did watch a bit of, but not, didn't get into it.
So those engineering days you had at school once in a blue moon where you had to make a nest for an egg or throw out the window, whatever.
Out of straws.
No, yeah, we did have to do a parachute for an egg.
Right, yeah. Parachute for an egg. That's you know, basically the sort of thing. Anything where you, basically, what I find really funny is you sort of think you know maths and engineering and they're very similar. And then you get faced with a practical problem and you realise you know nothing about how the world works mathematically. Because we're kind of talking about physics here, but, you know, you have this sense of, okay, you know, I have a vague understanding of how I operate as a being in the world and gravity and all of that. But then suddenly make a parachute for an egg, or as I had to the other day, we had to make a marble run with moving parts. We didn't have to, we were at a conference and it was fun. And suddenly you're like, how... angles and moving and what things, how does gravity work? It's just, if you have a good understanding of maths, it helps, but it's not enough because it's like practicalizing maths. And so the testing part is where you realize that all of your theories, actually the way that you've made them doesn't work. And it's normally the translation of the theories, because most theories, you know, tend to be fairly immutable. There's not much that changes about them over time, but it's just you've misapplied it. You've messed up. You didn't think about, you know, another factor in there. You didn't factor that in. And so I think the testing part is really, really interesting. The reason I bring up Scrap Heap Challenge is, oh my God, they just basically go to a junkyard and make stuff. And I'm not talking about like making, you know, something something really unimpressive. It's like, make something that can throw a massive cannonball more than 100 feet. And they're like, okay, and they just grab all the stuff. And they make this machine. And the testing part was so exciting because they had to, you know, it was really risky, like edge of your seat stuff. It was either going to be a triumph or a failure, never in between.
That was me watching Strictly Come Dancing, either going to be a triumph or a massive failure.
Exactly that. Or the whole thing doesn't even switch on, or the arm just
goes. That was Anne Widdecombe.
And the cannonball just rolls.
And that was Nancy DeLolio. I'll make everything Strictly.
So this sort of maths is a way of testing things, because it obviously evolved out of people were just like, I like that thing. And other people were like, I like that thing. And they were like, we need to measure so we can decide which is better. You know, it's that straightforward. It's to solve arguments. You know, who's built the best machine? Who's done the best? Whatever. So I think the testing and evaluating comes in that too. And I guess the thing that I find interesting about evaluation is that's where it all gets very murky and sinister and actually controlling. And so there's all kinds of really interesting people doing research on this at the moment, but particularly in education we have this like hyper performativity culture, and it's everywhere. But where like you have to measure everything and only the things you measure matter. And it so sucks the life out of any kind of pursuit, activity, profession, because you end up performing the things for the people that care about particular values of measure, and everything else gets undervalued and you don't end up doing it. And then you get into this cycle of actually that you game the system, you incentivize certain behavior, which is completely, but most of the time actually not central to the job you were doing anyway. And you see it in the NHS as well, and loads of places. And so, you know, maths can be used as a weapon as much as anything else. And that's where, you know, I think it does get dodgy. And so one of the things that I'm really interested in is the ethics of mathematicians. And we don't have like an ethics body in this country yet. We should, because lots of mathematicians get asked to do lots of stuff like that, design a system to evaluate this or that. And rather than being able to stand back and say, well, there should be actually some consideration given to other things that you haven't thought about, or if I do this people might do this, quite often as a mathematician you might say, well, I don't know how to do any of those things, so I'll just design the thing you asked me for, and then lay it down the line. You know, stuff goes horribly wrong because no one's thought about it. So I guess it's like psychology on top of maths, isn't it? And that's what's needed when you do that kind of thing. I've gone very serious, haven't I?
I liked it. We can do everything in one podcast. We can go from measuring penises to very serious debates. Yeah. And I love that.
Yeah. Using maths to define things. Oh, I like that very much.
In what way?
So when I was teaching my daughters during lockdown, one of my daughters was really interested in circles. I'm not surprised. I'm really interested in circles. And we started the lesson. I thought it would go in one direction. It really didn't, because I said, how do we define a circle? And I know from studying maths for a long time that this is not a straightforward question. It sounds like it might be. I don't want you to say, oh, it's the set of all points that are equidistant from a particular point.
That's all right. I wasn't going to say that.
I could see you were about to say it. I just thought I'd say it.
I was going to say, well, it's sort of round.
Right. And that's what's more interesting, because if you say it's about equal distance from a kind of middle point, fine. But if you say it's sort of round, I'm so much more interested in that as a mathematician, because define sort of round. Like, draw me some shapes that are circles, but draw me some that aren't. And how are you drawing that line between one and the other? Like, what is it? What criteria? And can you see that we do need a criterion? Because otherwise, your opinion, and again, my opinion, will differ. So we need to think about like being a bit strict with a set of properties, right? So me and my daughter were talking about, okay, so it's about something that looks kind of roundish but also has a middle, and if I stood somewhere on the outside, I'd be the same distance from the middle as you if you also stood on the outside. Great. But then she was like, oh, okay, so what if I draw a shape that is a bit like that but isn't like that, and it's got some of those properties but not other ones, but also it does this thing. And we basically made up a whole new shape this lesson. It was so exciting. It was brilliant. So funny. And the reason that's a mathematical thing to do is because defining things by properties or how you generate them is like how you play with objects and shape. And if you can't do that, like, what's the point? Like, I can find, you know, if you give me a circle theorem question and there's a missing angle, I can find you one. But to some extent, I kind of don't care. Like, why do I want to do that? What's interesting about it? What problem am I trying to solve? Whereas if you start with, well, what is a circle and what do I use it for? Much more interesting. And when I have something that's a bit like a circle but not quite, will that do? I'm hooked on this question. Let's find a context for that. Well, why would you need a circle for something like, okay, a plate? Well, can I have something that is shaped like a plate but not completely round? Of course I can, but what's the problem with it? It's really hard to mass produce because of the way plates are made. And so you have to make it a different way. And all of a sudden I'm thinking about potter's wheels and all kinds of fun stuff, and then kebabs, like thinking about how you get kebab meat off or on. Round things, why are things round? It's about evenness. Do you see what I mean? I'm already like, this is so cool. And just because I'm thinking like explicitly about defining things, because it matters. So more things that are circles, anyone? Anyone think of anything that's circular that you want to talk about?
My brain's just
But I was thinking, I was not thinking about circles, but I was thinking about when we were talking about coming to do this podcast and your brother immediately going, oh, I haven't used any of my maths. And same with you. And the whole, you know, well, why did I need to know Pythagoras's theorem? You know, because
I'm still a bit confused about that one, I'm not going to lie.
No, but listening to you talking about circles and, you know, just the fact that if there was the lesson that had all about a circle and all the rest, you end up learning so much.
I still think I'd quite like to have learnt about taxes at some point, because I really don't fucking understand them.
Well, you make a good point, and I can't argue with it.
Thank you, because they're really quite overwhelming. You hit adulthood and you're like, you what? I had to have somebody explain how mortgage worked the other day. No idea.
Also ridiculous. Agreed. It's crazy. I think the thing is, you know, the argument, when will I use this again? Again, comes back to this kind of traditional math. Well, you won't. And partly because you might use the bigger ideas, and I'll come back to that in a sec, but yeah, you have a calculator, right? I have a calculator. If I'm splitting dinner with friends, I ain't doing that in my head. I quite like it. It's quite fun, but not when I've had a few gins. So I prefer to do it on a calculator to make sure it's right. But equally, even some quite computational stuff, if I'm running, you know, if I'm thinking about trying to do a calculation, I'll use a spreadsheet. I'll write an algorithm. I'll use some code. You know, I'm not doing all this stuff by hand. I don't need to. It doesn't matter. If I was doing something that needed a theorem generally, I would, you know, do it somewhere that uses computational tools that isn't my brain, because humans are fallible and I might make a mistake and that's annoying. But the thing is, the bigger ideas you absolutely do. And so some of these things I'm talking about, knowing how to ask the right questions that are mathematical and can be answered by maths, knowing how to define things in important ways, abstraction, such an important thing that actually if we get it right in maths classrooms, kids have this real sense of how to abstract. And I don't mean something fluffy or just mental. I mean taking a situation, stripping out all the things you don't need and just focusing on the parts of that you need to solve the problem, and then crucially putting all the other stuff back in and saying, does it work? Testing it out in this situation where we've got real people and actual, you know, the real world and all this stuff I didn't think about because people are idiots and don't behave how I thought they would. So, you know, again, psychology.
That's the quote of the episode. People are idiots.
So, yeah, you know, that's kind of what I'm trying to get at, that if we have this sense of what maths can do for us, like what can we use it to make or like have fun with, rather than just the what, you know, just the today we're doing the mean, let's all calculate the mean 57 times.
Oh, I forgot about the mean.
Okay.
Oh my God. Oh,
and just to be clear, like, I'm not putting the blame on teachers here, because this is a system in which they are forced to go too fast with too much content, teaching really, really surface level. They've got too many students to really, you know, meet them where they are a lot of the time. The assessment practices drive everything, and the exams, you know, the sorts of questions that kids have to do in exams drive what happens in the classroom, so they pass exams. And, you know, there's a whole system over here which is just oppressive to teachers. And so it's quite well documented that there are lots of teachers that have this sense of how they want to teach and why they join teaching, sense of what they have to do actually to get by day to day, and how much stress it causes them to have that conflict. You know, it's really present.
Yeah, really, really hard.
Okay, I'm ready to be crowned. Sorry.
Okay, so we're going to put this crown on. So we anoint you, our mass queen.
Thank you. Hang on, just for you or the whole world? Because this is really important.
No, no, the whole world.
We have complete control over the world.
Universe. In fact, let's not just stay here. Yeah, we'll go universe. Yeah.
Thank you.
Mass queen.
Yeah.
Okay. What are you going to do with your reign?
As everybody who's ever gained power does with their reign, which is to stop talking about the things that I campaigned for, sit on my ass and eat biscuits.
Yes! What kind of biscuit?
It's a good question. I'm not going to be drawn because maths can answer that question better than I can. So I leave you to draw your own conclusions about what the best biscuit is. Somebody did do some research on it. I can report that for you. Overall, the nation thinks that a chocolate hobnob is the best.
Fuck off!
Whoa! This is why I didn't say what my opinion is, because it divides the nation.
Chocolate hobnob, okay. Nation's okay. Wrong. Whoever thinks that's wrong.
Well, enjoy your reign.
Thanks. Thanks so much.
And thank you so much for coming on.
I don't hate maths as much anymore.
You're welcome. Well, I feel like that is a win. That's a massive win. Yeah.
That's a win.
Great.
I might even attempt to do some at some point. Oh, no, that's a bit far. That's a bit far. That's a bit far. Just the Tupperware.
Okay, maths. What a riot.
Well, I enjoyed that a lot more than I thought, and I didn't bring out too much trauma.
No, I think you've now nicely muddied the waters with your trauma that you can go, oh, trauma. Hey, great fun. Oh, trauma. Great fun. So now, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, my love of organising can get me through anything.
Well, okay, so what have we learned? Because let's go back to the question, why do people love to hate maths?
Because the way we teach maths is fucking stupid.
Yeah, okay, good. Okay. That's exactly why we love
because
to hate it.
Because of Gove.
Yeah.
Mr. Gove, you suck.
Well, and I think not just him, but I think the whole history of maths teaching and it being hard.
Yeah.
And not allowed to be fun.
Yeah.
And therefore, if you've been through it and it's hard and you come out with a trauma, then you're going to assume that it's traumatic for everybody.
Yeah.
And so then we hate on it, and culturally we hate on it. But that actually a lot of maths is quite good fun. I love doing a graph.
Yeah, but you've always liked maths.
Well, that's true. That's true. But you like colouring in.
Yeah, but I like to stay within the lines. I'm a type A person.
Organising. So all of that aspect of maths is good. What else have I learned? Our maths education needs to change.
Massively needs to change. Yeah, definitely.
What's
without a doubt.
Betting that we'd listen back to this in many, many years' time and the maths education has not changed.
I've learned that swearing, maths and dirty mind go hand in hand.
Yeah. And because history will always tell you that maths and art and music and creativity and swearing and all the rest always goes together. But not in the classroom.
But not in the classroom.
Which is a shame.
Yeah.
Other thing I found really interesting was that we're not all equal in terms of going into that room of maths education.
No.
And especially being black male.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that maths room isn't for you.
No.
That really needs to change.
Yeah, massively.
And that being female teaching maths and any other ethnicity apart from white male teaching maths, then you're obviously not good enough, which has to change.
And that we have the power to crown people. I've learned that. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. I like Mother's Ruin.
I like it way more than I thought I would.
Yeah, I really like it.
It can come again.
I'm a mother. I'm quite happily ruining myself again with that. And maths is so much more than
Pythagoras' fucking theorem. Yeah. And that is the official title of it. If you enjoyed this episode,
listen to more. We've got tons.
Got loads. And if you like them, really, really like them, you could always leave us a review because apparently they're quite helpful.
You can also subscribe.
You can.
And then you don't even need to go and find us. We just appear.
Every single week.
Yeah.
We are on Twitter at
Topic Gin.
And on Instagram,
Topic Gin. Yay! Join us next week for another gin and another topic.